We continue here with the second half of Deborah Reeves' discussion at the FAEA conference in Orlando.
Former Bush, former Clinton administration officials, we invited experts on learning and cognition, education association executives, and communication experts who were charged with facilitating and documenting these conversations. And then to say that as we gathered for 2.5 days, to say that our group struggled as we began to talk about what education can learn from the arts would in fact be an understatement. At one point, I have to honestly say, I stepped back and I thought, whose idea was this anyway? The first and the second day, the more we talked about being concrete and also being practical, the more we somehow seemed to drift to the theoretical. And Olivia's here and was a part of that group. Hi, Olivia. The more we tried to find a common ground for collective action, the more we found ourselves sharing deep and heartfelt beliefs in heterogeneity and the importance of individual expression. And for a day and a half, the truth be told, it looked as though we really were not going to make too much progress toward distilling some kind of collective voice. But I have to say, in tribute to every single individual at that table, we all stayed in the game. We all stayed focused, and we stayed engaged, deeply engaged in the conversation. And you know what? Then the magic began to happen. And it started with arts advocate Scott Shanklin Peterson, who was talking about the one thing that she thought made the visual arts distinct, and that was the studio. She said that was the place that brims with innovation, with observation, with imagination, creativity, and careful critiques of one another's work. She said regular school classrooms rarely, if ever, have those things. It was Metropolitan Museum of Art community education leader Kent Lidecker who picked up Scott's thread and followed her idea. And he encouraged everyone around the table to see the power in her words. Every classroom a studio, he said. Think about that for a moment. And then for Olivia Goudet, artist, educator, activist extraordinaire, who has worked with community groups across the country to produce thoughtful and provocative murals. If all classrooms could be studios, Olivia said, there was no reason that every school could not be a canvas. And then there was a middle school art teacher there, a nationally board certified teacher who had been quiet and reflective most of the time. He joined the conversation, and hearing about a world with every classroom a studio and every school a canvas, he wondered why stop there. He said, why not make every community a museum, in fact? After all, it was working pretty well for him, as it does for many other art teachers, as they hang student artwork in the local Board of Education, in the county executive's office, in the State Department of Education, the local mall, and just about anywhere and everywhere that there may be space to exhibit student work. And then it should come as no surprise to this group that it was Elliot Eisner then who took the group's emerging vision one step further. And Elliot asked the question, he said, with every classroom a studio and every school a canvas, and with every community a museum, why not a future with every child a work of art? And so it was after hours of collective struggle here in Aspen, and just a few minutes of magic, a bold vision for the future of education to embrace was beginning to emerge. And this is a vision that speaks to why we do what we do, and that speaks to our passion for developing human potential. A powerful example of collaboration. Out of this group of 25 and these rich and diverse conversations, six individuals then provided small pieces of a puzzle, and a seventh heard them and figured out how to connect each of those pieces. And our collective power as a group was once again more than any one of us could have mustered single-handedly. It always comes back to our students, doesn't it? That is why we do what we do. And that collective power is living as a catalyst for multiple conversations that we're going to continue to have and that we all must have at multiple levels. Because you see, at Aspen, we not only anticipated an alternative future, but we connected closely with our National Association's rich past. We had also discovered a remarkable document that was written in 1977. It was a task force report written 31 years ago on the state of art education, what we believe and why we believe it. Many said, in looking at that report, that although the means and the mediums used by visual arts educators and artists have evolved tremendously over the last three decades, that this document, the 31-year-old document, captured with great vision and great insight the underlying values that had largely shaped their professional lives and values that we still subscribe to today. And this history will continue to guide and provide rich, rich guidance as we craft a new statement of values and beliefs. But you know, the big question for me was, this document that had such incredible insight and such incredible vision had never been shared beyond our own community. And while it was disseminated in and among art educators, it went on the shelf and never had any traction beyond that. And I believe that that is our charge today. Just in having conversations with many of you prior to, it's all about relationships. And it's about going beyond our own community and perhaps defining our role a little bit differently than it has been defined historically. You know, this Aspen conversation, I want to invite you all into it, encourage you to go to the NAEA website where you'll find some of the questions, the agenda, the conversation, and I want to encourage you to pick those pieces up and step up as a leader and begin to generate some of those same conversations in your own learning communities and in your own broader communities. But as we came to a close with this Aspen Summit, we went around the room and we asked each participant if there was something that they would like to leave with a group, some parting thoughts. And it was Lois Hatlin's turn to speak. And she said that she hoped that that particular meeting would help our professional associations to develop this new cadre of educators who would lead by listening and then acting. I liked Lois's vision. I liked it a lot. It made me think about what if we no longer felt compelled to develop the best ideas ourselves, but what if we saw every teacher and every child interaction as the one that may unlock new ways to combine the dizzying array of new technologies with time-tested results of how to engage children in meaningful learning. What if we develop strategies to deepen the knowledge and understanding of the value of the arts in teaching, leading, and learning, so that other principals and other classroom teachers and parents would begin to develop new awarenesses? And what if, even as executive director, or our president, or officers of your state, your national association, what if they were recognized not only for their abilities to analyze, synthesize, and to advocate, but what if they were recognized for an unparalleled ability to ferret out the best of what others are doing? And what if we all were willing to work tirelessly to turn small seeds into beanstalks that would make Jack and, yes, perhaps Jill proud? You know, it's almost 10 years into the 21st century. We're coming up on the end of the first decade of the 21st century. And America is an increasingly visual society driven by new forms of digital media every day. And as we use these new tools and we Google ourselves silly in the largest collection of visual imagery that the world has ever seen, our competitive advantage in the global arena is going to increasingly rest on our creativity and also on our innovation. As Daniel Pink has argued so persuasively, we are all in the arts business. so what does this seismic digital shift mean for your national organization? Because I believe that we're ushering in both the most exciting and the challenging time in our history. And the big question is, how should we respond? And just starting for a moment, if you will, with No Child Left Behind. We all know that even its most avid proponents don't anticipate how the emphasis on improving test scores would lead to literally millions of children practicing how to fill in these little black bubbles as part of test prep, aimed primarily at achieving modest test score gains for very small groups of kids. And I've recently, I don't know about you, but I've come across a word that continues to show up and is creating a pattern in the literature that describes this generation of test takers. They're being called bubble kids. And in lobbying to fix what we see as wrong with this law, we are in the midst of taking a fundamentally different approach. We're no longer content to simply justify our role or ask meekly for our place at the table. No, we are, at the national level, speaking forcefully on behalf of what all of America's children and youth need and deserve to be successful in the 21st century. And we're speaking forcefully about the value of teachers who are highly qualified and teachers who are certified to teach the visual arts. Every child, as we all know, must have the ability to construct, to select, to edit, present, and to critique visual images. But every child also needs to experience the joy of exploring freely in a culture of opportunity rather than responding mindlessly in a test-driven culture of constant demand. And every child needs to be treated as the wonder that he or she is, like a work of art. Is that too much to ask? So in rising to these and also to other challenges, we can't waste time. None of us can play catch up because we're going to have to literally leapfrog. We have to reconceptualize the arguments for arts education to take into account how the world is changing. We need to bring in the hard science. Arts education is vital to brain development. We need to bring in the social science. Arts education is fundamental to the development of the whole person, as well as the sense of humanity and civic sensibility that underpins great society. And we also need to bring in the strategic business perspective, because arts education is necessary for developing the creative fundamentals of tomorrow's workforce. That's going to be so vital to keeping America competitive in the global marketplace. And when we're making our case to superintendents, to boards of education, to state departments of education, and yes, to newly appointed, within a matter of weeks, administration officials, our mantra can no longer be that art is just as important as reading and math and science. Instead, it must be that art education is at least as vital as reading and arguably more critical than either arithmetic or writing. We have to step up in some very dramatic ways, and we have to challenge the status quo. All you have to do is sit in on a math class today. The students are doing all of their calculations on digital devices. If you look over your students' shoulders when they're doing their homework on the computer, you'll see that the computer's correcting their and our grammar, our spelling. If you go into some of the labs where the technologies are constantly being developed, new technologies are being researched and piloted, you can see that there's software already that takes dictation and translates our awkward ramblings into serviceable English. Yes, the world is rapidly changing. You know, I once heard, I'm not into sports in a big sort of way, but I once heard an interview with a great hockey player named Wayne Gretzky. And as he was being interviewed, the interviewer asked, he said, you know, you were slow and you were skinny, and yet you were one of the best, if not the very best, hockey player of all time. And the interviewer said, how did you ever manage that? And I was really listening and intrigued to see what he might say. And here's what he said. He said, you know, most people skate to where the puck is. And he said, I always skated to where the puck was going. Now think about that for a minute. And you can think about it a couple of ways. Most people skate to where the puck is. I always skated to where the puck was going. I think that as art educators and as educators, we need to skate to where the puck is going. And it's heading to a place where the visual arts have an absolutely critical role to play. This is part of our nation's future. Art education is uniquely able to feed the development of the individual, of the community, and also of a society. And we need these leaders who are relentless and creative, driving these points home and transforming the collective perception of this value of arts education. And in this world that is so often, right now, at this moment in time, focused on course subjects and standardized tests, there's also a very strong case to be made for the continual nurturing of creativity, imagination, and inspiration in a way that's dynamic and thrilling and enables children to pursue learning as they move through the various stages of their life. Yes, developing the whole child. The implications are broad, not just for schools, but for society as a whole. And if schools cut time for the arts, they may be losing their ability to produce not just the artistic creators of the future, but innovative leaders who improve the world that they will inherit. And research shows that far from being irrelevant in a test-driven education system, arts education is becoming even more important as standardized tests exert a narrowing influence over what schools teach. It's well established that intelligence and thinking ability are far more complex than what is measured on standardized tests. These high-stakes exams that we use in our schools, almost exclusively focused on verbal and quantitative skills, do in fact reward children who have a knack for language and math and who can absorb and give back information. They reveal little about a student's intellectual depth or their actual desire to learn. And they're poor predictors of eventual success and satisfaction in life. And plus, the bottom line is, and we all know this, the arts do make you smarter. We see it. We know it. And while we can't prove causality, students involved in the arts do better in school and on their SATs than those who are not. So as the world begins to turn in our direction, we have to make sure that as arts educators, we are ready to seize these opportunities that are coming our way. And more importantly, I believe that not only is it about seizing the opportunity, but as educators, we have a responsibility to step up and to shape these new models of teaching and leading and learning. What can education learn from the arts? And I think we're going to have to develop rigorous ways to measure our children's progress in the arts, not by building bigger and better bubble kids, but by building assessment systems that measure real-world progress in expression, innovation, and also in creativity. We'll need a proof of concept to sustain our rightful place at or near the top of the education food chain. And this will not be an easy task. And we're going to have to get over our reluctance to embrace quantitative research. Sure, it's by no means the only form of valid research, but we have to get over it and realize that quantitative research has immense potential, power, and an important role to play in making the world a slightly less complex place. Put differently, if we are the ones who figure out how to ask the right research questions, we also are the ones who will be holding the research-based answers to shape not only future debates about the visual arts, but debates about the broader education field as well. And I have to tell you that within the National Art Education Association, I'm very proud to report to you that not only are we preparing to react to the quantum leaps of others, but we're taking a few of those quantum leaps ourselves. We're building the infrastructure that we need to listen to you far more effectively in the future. And with the launch just weeks away of a new 21st century virtual community of practice, a brand new website, we expect to have regular conversations built around soliciting important research questions from the field. Important testimonials and powerful stories of what's happening in our nation's schools and within teaching, leading, and learning in art education. And I'm particularly fascinated by the potential of these digital technologies to change the dynamic of bringing our communities together to create change. I love the idea that we're going to have our own 24/7 virtual community of practice out there in cyberspace. And I can't wait to see all the new creative ways that we're going to amp up our social networking within our community. I mean, honestly, if Tia Tequila can have a million perfect strangers to sign up as her friends, well, come on, we should certainly be able to use this digital technology to harness the energy and the creativity of those who are already our kindred spirits and turn them into comrades in arms. In our field, we are entrusted with something that's really close to sacred. Day in and day out, we have a powerful window into the inner lives of millions of children and youth across our country. And when we take a false step, if we listen, they will let us know. And if we get it right, we see it in a little glint of recognition in their eyes. And we also see it in the nuances captured in their creations. We see it in their growing content with the feel on their fingertips and the shades of light and color that they are observing and responding to for the first time. And so I ask you, what do we need to do to make sure that all children develop to their fullest potential? We have to move beyond spending most of our energy on defending turf, and we have to focus instead on defining the future for America's children. And we have to move beyond the usual complaints about budget cuts and move toward engaging political and the public through these powerful stories of the arts and their impact on our students. And we have to move beyond accepting sort of a second-class status, if you will, in our schools, and toward insisting that every child receive a first-rate education that includes learning in the arts. And as we strive to assert this vision of the future that's driven by the visual arts, we must also take time to develop this next generation of leaders. And by the next generation, I don't mean simply the next cohort group. I'm talking about a truly new generation in attitude and style and spirit who will regenerate our discipline and literally lead us to these new frontiers. And as we strive to assert a vision of a future that's driven by the visual arts, we can't expect this to be easy. Former Secretary Riley's advisor and after-school advocate, Terry Peterson, was a part of our Aspen Institute. And as a part of that conversation, he was talking about what he had learned in 20 years of organizing statewide campaigns at every level. And he said, the interesting thing is that poll data tell us that almost everyone is in favor of change for our schools when polled. And he said, but the interesting thing is that 50% of those who favor change want to go back to the basics, while the other 50% want to be preparing our children for the future. So it's no wonder that given those conditions, that at times it feels like while the rest of the world is changing at a dizzying pace, that sometimes our schools pretty much remain the same. But just imagine for a second, just among visual arts teachers in elementary, middle, and high schools, there are about 75,000 of us. Imagine the power of a professional community unleashed. And when we join our colleagues in music and our colleagues in dance and theater, the numbers grow even more rapidly. And so just imagine for a moment, if you would, doubling, tripling the size of our arts education community by personally inviting a colleague who is not engaged and involved to join vibrant state and national professional associations. Organizations that are constantly shifting, changing, that are agile and adaptive and productive in unprecedented ways. And then I ask you in a practical sense, how do we move some of these ideas? These big ideas, this vision, how do we move these into actions that are going to lead to results? And I would say to you, be involved even more than you already have been, and invite others to become engaged. Be the team leader on an initiative planned by your school or your state association. Be the originator of an initiative. Bring an idea to the forefront, develop it, research its plausibility, and drive its success. Run for a leadership position, for an office, step up and step out in some new and different ways. And as a second step, I would say to you that when you do these things, be authentic. Be clear about why you do what you do. It gives you great power when you unleash your passion. And I would say to you, when it's necessary, break conventions and leave your comfort zone and navigate foreign territories. Recognize, see with new eyes, recognize unexpected opportunities, and have the nimbleness of mind and spirit to capitalize upon those opportunities. And when you do, share your story so that we can all learn from you. You know, at the end of that Harvard Business Review article that I was reading on the plane, the authors reminded me that we all do our very best work when we remember that the work that we are doing is in fact noble. And I ask you, what is more noble than working tirelessly to unleash the human potential of America's next generation? And in closing, I challenge each of you to be noble, to be open, to be relentless, to be creative, to get on with making your mark, because new ideas will, in fact, emerge from places that you may never have expected. And be encouraged, as I am, by a future that will be created by artists and designers, by photographers and illustrators, by creators, by empathizers, pattern recognizers, and by meaning makers. Because after all, the arts are the meeting place of the human condition. It's the intersection of thought, creativity, culture, and yes, action. Take it on. Thank you.